This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
This is part two of a two-part series. If you missed part one, please start there. One day in 1872, an Irish customs officer working in India decided to play hooky from work. Instead, Officer William Blewett went hunting. Before long, bang, he bagged an owl. Blewett was thrilled. Collectors in England paid big money for birds from India, especially owls, and this one was lovely. But when Blewett sent the bird to a naturalist, he got an unwelcomed surprise. Blewett thought he had shot a species called the spotted owlet. They're around 10 inches tall, with gray-brown backs and wings and a fluffy white undercarriage. They also have yellow eyes and spots on their heads. But the naturalist told him that this owl was different. Its head lacked spots, and it had fuller feathers on the neck and legs. It also had a larger bill and massive claws for crushing prey, with toes as thick as children's fingers. The naturalist congratulated Blewett. He had discovered a species new to science. He proposed using Blewett's name in the official Latin designation. The news horrified Blewett. In writing the species up, the naturalist needed to describe where and when it had been collected. If Blewett's boss saw that, he would realize that Blewett had played hooky and fire him. So Blewett lied. He claimed that his brother had shot the owlet, not him. That way, he kept his job, but also got to keep the family name and the bird's name. A win-win. The species Blewett collected is now called the forest owlet. Over the next dozen years, six more specimens turned up in India, including some from a British officer named James Davidson. Remember that name. But when they looked into where the forest owlet lived, biologists noticed something. They'd all been collected in two small teakwood forests that sat 550 miles apart. That's strange. Usually birds either live in one small area or they extend over a wide range. But two isolated pockets? It was unheard of. Unfortunately, no other forest owlets turned up for decades, so the mystery over its range remained unsolved. At last, another one emerged in 1961. Not in the wild, but in the private collection of Richard Meinertshagen, the posh British ornithologist with a penchant for stealing birds from museums. And in finding the specimen, Meinertshagen announced that he had solved the mystery of the forest owlet's range. He was lying, and his tangle of lies would plunge ornithologists into an even deeper mystery about the forest owlet. Had it been wiped out? Or was there still a chance to save this lovely bird from extinction? From the Science History Institute, this is Sam Keen and the Disappearing Spoon, a topsy-turvy, science-y history podcast, where footnotes become the real story. In 1961, Richard Meinertshagen announced that he had snagged the forest owlet in his collection 46 years earlier. He simply hadn't recognized it then, since it looked a lot like the spotted owlet. Finding any forest owlet was a big deal. By that point, none had been seen in the wild since 1884. Furthermore, Meinertshagen announced that he had shot it in what's now the state of Gujarat, near the Arabian Sea in western India. This excited ornithologists. Again, naturalists knew of only two spots where the owlet existed. Meinertshagen's report now extended its range to a different habitat. It confirmed their suspicion that the forest owlet, while rare, extended over a broad area. So ornithologists decided to track the owl down. Several well-funded expeditions scoured its hypothetical range in the 1960s and 1970s. But while they found plenty of spotted owlets, no sign of the forest owlet ever emerged. Depressingly, In 1972, they concluded that the owlet had gone extinct. All that remained of its existence were the stuffed specimens in museums. That was the state of things when Pamela Rasmussen began compiling her field guides on the birds of India in the 1990s. Field guides focus on living birds, so initially Rasmussen ignored the forest owlet. She was far more worried about the 14 species of birds where Meinertzhagen was the only source for their presence in India, a fear triggered when she read an article about Meinertzhagen's fraudulent science. A few weeks later, she visited a facility outside London where Meinertzhagen's collection was kept. She got specimens from those 14 species and examined their preparation style, the quirks that distinguish one specimen preparer from another. At a glance, the birds all seemed to have been prepared by the same person. But upon closer examination, she found signs of tampering to cover up the telltale signs of other preparers. It became clear that all 14 birds had been prepared differently, by different people. She also checked each specimen against the Natural History Museum's records. Then she tracked down the ornithologists from whom Meinertzhagen had stolen each bird. In the end, none of the 14 species checked out. They'd been collected in a variety of places. Siberia, China, Mongolia, but not India. On a whim, Rasmussen also examined Meinertzhagen's forest owlet, the one he claimed he had collected in 1914, and she found damning evidence that he had stolen it from the British Army officer James Davidson. What was the giveaway? For one thing, Rasmussen saw that the owlet's abdomen was loosely stitched together. When specimens are fresh, you can stitch them shut tightly because the skin still stretches. After it dries, skin turns brittle. Loose stitching is therefore a red flag that someone has reworked a specimen. Rasmussen noticed other clues, too. Davidson tended to stretch the neck of his specimens, like a giraffe. And on the owlet that Meinertzhagen had supposedly collected, the neck had been folded to shorten it. Someone was trying to mask Davidson's handiwork. Davidson also stuffed his bird's wings with cotton, which most preparers do not do. The wings of Meinertzhagen's owlet were not stuffed, but when Rasmussen gently sliced its wing open, she found a tiny, overlooked lump of cotton in the very tip. It was greasy and yellow from the oils it absorbed from the bird's skin. Rasmussen then got hold of one of Davidson's authentic specimens. She removed a bit of yellow cotton from its wing. She sent both bits to an FBI crime lab to analyze them. The lab quickly got back to her. The fibers were a perfect match. As a final bit of detective work, Rasmussen checked Meinertzhagen's diaries for the month he supposedly collected his owlet. They revealed that he had never even left Mumbai that month. He couldn't. World War I had just broken out, and he was too swamped with intelligence work to go hunting. In a criminal trial, a jury would have convicted Meinertzhagen in about 5 minutes. He was guilty, guilty, guilty of stealing the owlet from Davidson. As mentioned last week, Meinertzhagen once claimed that Lawrence of Arabia confessed something to him, that he, Lawrence, was a fraud and would be found out someday. In reality, that was probably Meinertzhagen's own guilty conscience talking. At this point, Rasmussen was feeling pleased with herself. She had exposed Meinertzhagen, she had restored credit to lesser-renowned ornithologists, and she had avoided several potentially embarrassing mistakes in her field guide. But one thing continued to nag her. Again, Meinertzhagen's supposed 1914 owlet appeared in different regions compared to the authentic ones. And in the 1960s, when Meinertzhagen's reputation was still stellar, that one data point had convinced biologists that the owlet lived across a wide range. But without Meinertzhagen's data point, that theory crumbled. And when Rasmussen checked into the expeditions from the 1960s and 1970s to find the owlets, she realized that none of them had checked the actual locations where Davidson and others had collected their specimens. Rasmussen was dumbfounded at the implication. The species had already been declared extinct. But was it? There was only one way to find out. She would have to go to India. Rasmussen knew that the hunt for the forest owlet would be difficult. The bird had been recorded in just two small patches of teakwood forest. They sat 550 miles apart. Heavy logging and deforestation had decimated those patches since 1884 and might have pushed the bird elsewhere. Equally bad, her team did not know what the owlet sounded like. In a forest, you can hear birds from much farther away than you can see them. Plus, ornithologists searching for rare species often lure the birds by playing recordings of their calls. That was not an option here. In fact, the more Rasmussen thought about it, the more her trip seemed hopeless. In her words, she figured she had a, quote, higher chance of being killed in a car wreck than of finding this bird. She added, and the closer it got to the time to go, the more I felt it was silly to even try. The only clue to help her was something James Davidson had said. He had found his owlets perched on top of bare, leafless trees around dawn and dusk, so her team would concentrate their efforts at those times. The expedition began in November 1997. Rasmussen's team started in Raipur in eastern India. They spent day after day tramping through the woods there, guessing at different calls that the owlets might make. They squeaked and squawked. They trilled and hooted. Nothing worked. No owlets appeared. After 9 empty days, they left in low spirits. They drove 550 miles to their second target area, the Taloda Nature Reserve in western India. Upon arrival, their shoulders sagged in disappointment. The reserve was sparse, and it lacked a solid canopy, not promising for a so-called forest owlet. They nevertheless resumed tramping about and hooting and trilling, hoping one would turn up. Instead, more empty days passed. November 25th was their second-to-last day. A determined Rasmussen shook her crew awake at 4 a.m. to head out. They spent 4 hours trudging around. By 8:30, she gave up. The day was already hot, too hot for most birds to be active. They would regroup and try again at dusk. Rasmussen opened a water bottle and turned for home. At that moment, a man in her crew stopped in his tracks. Then, quietly, he said, "Look at that owl."
Struggling with weight that doesn't respond to traditional dieting? ProLon's 5-Day Fasting Mimicking Diet is a clinically developed nutrition program designed to promote fat loss while protecting lean body mass. Developed at USC's Longevity Institute, it assists the body in entering a fasting-like state that helps reset metabolism, target visceral fat, and supports healthy metabolic markers. In just 5 days, ProLon offers a structured, science-backed approach to weight loss without extreme restriction or guesswork. Get 15% off plus a $40 bonus gift when you subscribe at prolonlife.com/begin.
When her colleague said, "Look at that owl," Pamela Rasmussen turned and dropped her water bottle in shock. The bird was sitting in a tree, not far off. She took a long second to convince herself that it was not a spotted owlet. The two species do look alike, but she saw no spots. Plus, the claws were too thick and its neck and leg feathers were too fluffy. She was staring at the first recorded forest owlet in 113 years. But would anyone believe her? Recall the episode I did a few seasons ago on the ivory-billed woodpecker. Plenty of people have claimed to see that bird, but without a specimen or clear pictures, bird sightings do not count for much. So upon seeing the forest owlet, Rasmussen wanted to fling her pack down and rip her camera out. But sudden movement could startle the bird, so she proceeded as slowly as she could. Her tactic did not work. She heard a fluttering of wings and looked up. To her horror, the bird was taking flight. Her heart leapt into her throat. Would she ever see one again? But she need not have worried. The owlet was not flying away. If anything, it was flying closer. It wanted a better look at her. It landed on a branch and then just sat there, checking her out, cocking its head like birds do. Rasmussen's hands were shaking as she aimed her video camera. But she got 30 full minutes of footage, as did her colleague. They probably would have filmed all day, except another bird finally started harassing the owlet, and it flew off. The next day, they found a second owlet at 8 a.m., at a spot 200 yards from the first. They even captured its call this time, a sort of monkey war hoot. Listen. And with that, with both video and audio evidence, they officially resurrected the forest owlet from extinction. Rasmussen and her team published a paper about the discovery to great acclaim. But perhaps the most important outcome of her work was the long overdue exposure of Richard Meinertzhagen. Meinertzhagen's fieldwork ended in 1960. That year, when he was 82, a dog in a park tripped him and he fell and broke his hip. He was essentially bedridden until he died 7 years later. At that time, his legacy seemed secure. A celebrated ornithologist, a spy so daring he inspired James Bond. What a life. But after Rasmussen and others exposed his frauds, historians began to scrutinize Meinertzhagen's biography with more skeptical eyes. They found that he had invented most of his spy exploits. His personal life suddenly looked ugly as well. I've put together a bonus episode about this at patreon.com/disappearingspoon. In short, there is now good evidence that Meinertzhagen either murdered his wife in cold blood or killed her in a duel. He might have done so for two reasons. One, she threatened to expose his scientific fraud. In addition, Meinertzhagen had developed a suspiciously close relationship with his 15-year-old cousin. All that at patreon.com/disappearingspoon. As with John James Audubon, a few clear-eyed colleagues in the mid-1900s had always suspected Meinertzhagen was not on the up-and-up. One colleague scoffed at Meinertzhagen's, quote, miraculous ability to stop very briefly somewhere, but nevertheless collect important material. And in retrospect, some of Meinertzhagen's collecting anecdotes seemed ludicrous, like the time in Tibet he supposedly snatched a rare bird off the back of a yak. After his death, when Meinertzhagen's 25,000 bird specimens arrived at the Natural History Museum in London, one curator there startled his colleagues by proposing that they burn the whole thing. He had never trusted Meinertzhagen, and he thought that the stolen specimens and forged location tags made the whole collection useless. In the end, they did not burn the birds, and good thing. The forensic work of Rasmussen and others has helped restore the collection's accuracy. But the damage has been real. Ornithologists had mapped the range and migratory routes of several species based in part on Meinertzhagen's data. This included some endangered species. All those maps suddenly needed rewriting at gigantic cost. Naturalists had to scramble to figure out where the endangered birds really lived. Overall, Meinertzhagen's deceptions have been called the greatest ornithological fraud ever. Personally, I'm not sure it beats out Audubon's Bird of Washington scam in terms of historical importance. After all, the Bird of Washington launched the career of the most famous ornithologist in history. But in terms of sheer scale, there's no question. Meinertzhagen is champ. His misdeeds with the forest owlet deserve special criticism. His claims about the bird's range forced ornithologists to waste years looking in the wrong places, and to do so at a critical time. A time when the owlet's real home was being logged for wood and was all but wiped out. Had he not deceived the world, we would have had decades longer to preserve and save the bird. Because sadly, despite the surge of hope from the rediscovery, the forest owlet remains endangered today. There are fewer than 1,000 in the wild. Now, we cannot lay all the blame on Richard Meinertzhagen here. Humans have driven a lot of species to the brink of extinction. But even a super sleuth like Pamela Rasmussen cannot undo all the damage that he has done to the animals that he claimed to love. This is the Disappearing Spoon podcast, brought to you by the Science History Institute. Be sure to check out their in-depth science history podcast, Distillations. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts or on their website, distillations.org. You can find more incredible stories in my books or at samkeen.com. You can also book me as a speaker there for your school or event. If you like this podcast, please spread the word and support it at patreon.com/disappearingspoon. You can also get bonus episodes and signed books at Patreon. This episode was written by me, Sam Keen. It was produced by Mariel Carr, Rigoberto Hernandez, and Sarah Kaplan. Our sound design, scoring, and mixing is by Row Home Productions. Row Home's creative director is Alex Lewis. John Myers is Row Home's executive producer. Thanks for listening.
Row Home Productions.